sun, sea, sand. An idyllic trip for many. A holiday romance just rounds off a wonderful time. You head home, never expecting to hear from them again. The next 2.5 years are proof that despite being separated by 1,000 miles, love cannot be denied. Except when it can. And you are adamant you have moved on and want nothing more to do with them. Their brutal revenge for being discarded by you is the stuff of nightmares. This is the case of Christine Schurer, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Murder Me Monday podcast. I'm Cameron, and joined with me is Mother.
Hello, welcome back everyone, and I hope you're all getting over the bugs, broken bones, and other misfortunes I've heard about over the break that we had. This episode is being released on Monday the 2nd of January 2023. Plus anyone who is now level 2 and 3 on Patreon will get next week's general release a week early. Plus, we should be releasing an exclusive episode for Patreon subscribers that week. So we've decided to revamp our levels a bit, haven't we, Cameron?
Basically, just allow level 2 and 3 to be the same, but 3 shows more support. More money, basically.
If you'd like to support us via Patreon, where you get early access and exclusive content and stickers should you want them, please do consider it. But leaving a review or even just hitting the star button helps. And a huge thank you to those of you that have done that. And welcome to our latest Patreon supporter, Cara. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you.
We would have uploaded this sooner and actually made a podcast sooner, but I was hit with the whole hell cold thing.
Yeah.
I've managed to dodge COVID for like 3 years. I don't know how. And then this thing hit me like a bus.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people. It's some people that have suffered way worse with this than they did with COVID when they caught it.
For reference, when I got sick, it was like -5 degrees outside. And then by the time I got over it again, it was like 13 degrees. I somehow like skipped a season. I was sick for so long that the climate had changed. And, now we're back recording. So here we are.
On to this week's episode. We rarely do warnings, but this week needs one. It involves child murder. We are all over the place to Sweden, Germany, Greece and Crete. Most of the reports are in Swedish, which made checking the English reports for accuracy rather challenging. Let me take you to Hanover in Germany, when on the 30th of June 1976, Christine was born. Almost nothing is available about her early life or family, except that when she was 11, her father left the family, and according to the reports, Christine had little to no contact with him. The reasons why are not known. The reports say that when she was older, she travelled to the USA to study as an exchange student and lived with relatives in Manhattan in New York. Other reports say she was actually an au pair. She also may have gone on to study in Oklahoma, but eventually went back to Germany, which would fit in with the au pair theory, as they're not allowed to stay in the USA more than 2 years as an au pair.
An au pair is just a long-term nanny.
It's not even supposed to be a nanny. It's
An extra adult in the house.
Yeah, it's an extra pair of hands.
We've had a couple. We've had like 3. One of them cooked way too much pasta. It was really weird.
Yeah, they lived on pasta. And the cheese, the volume of cheese that one went through was astonishing. It was like a kilo a week. I've never seen anything like it. Apparently, Christine ended up living in a place called Göttingen and studied history for 6 years. Now, Göttingen is known for its university, so it's probably true. But if my maths is right, she would have been 25 by this point. So probably only did 4 years of uni, not 6. I'm guessing here. She may have deferred for a year or two.
Well, you don't need to do 6 years in uni. A lot of courses, you can do 3 to get your undergrad.
Yeah, but she was said to have been there for 6 years. So I wondered if she deferred for a couple of years and maybe she'd been in a mental hospital.
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I'm saying if she's in uni for 6 years, that could be your master's.
Yeah, I know, but
you're doing like 3 and 3 in undergrad, 3 in master's, depending on what it is. I don't know what it is about history.
Exactly. But it's hidden by large language differences and privacy laws in Germany. She moved to Athens, full of history, yes, worked as an historian, but the pay is not great. And I would suspect a job working at a hostel, which was also to supplement her income.
What I've heard about people that study history, or specifically the ones that study Egyptology, is that there's no money in actually doing it.
Yeah.
You then have to teach people about it. So it's a pyramid scheme. You're teaching people about pyramids is what you're doing.
Yeah, I knew somebody who actually went through that. They ended up doing a second degree for exactly the same reason. She stays a year in Athens. So it's possibly an international intern placement, maybe? We don't know. She goes back to Germany and probably saves up for the next 12 months and heads back to the Mediterranean, Crete this time. Again, chock full of history, and again gets a job in a hostel. She would have been around, I think, 30-year-old at this point. She meets a man on a holiday from Sweden called Torgny in August of 2006.
Okay, yes, I just want to say something about how this is spelled. It's T-O-R-G-N-E-Y. That's Tony in a Scottish accent. Torgny, isn't it? His name's Tony. You can say Torgny as much as you want. It's Tony.
I listened to about 15 different versions on how to pronounce that, so...
It's Tony.
Yeah, if you're Scottish, as you see. So, average holiday romance, yeah? Hot and heavy for 4 or 5 days. Then he goes back to Sweden, and she goes back to Germany. They do sort of stay in contact, but it seemed she wanted much more than he did. As in the autumn of 2006, she visits him in his hometown of Arboga in Sweden.
This is in like early 2000, isn't it? Like 2005, 2006.
2006, yeah.
Because you said she's 30 and she was born in 76.
Yeah.
So they would have had phones. By that point, they were going to be what? Like the Motorola's? Probably a little bit more advanced than the Nokia
international texts, yeah, and all true. That mega expensive.
And there wasn't a social media. I'm just thinking about how they would communicate.
Emails.
Because she fell in love with his like wonder penis in those 4 days, 4 or 5 days. And then... Oh, wonder penis. Because German. And then they just stopped communicating. But she's seemingly in love with Tony.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm calling him Tony.
Okay, fair enough. So he doesn't feel quite the same way. A holiday romance is one thing, but back to reality, it wasn't working for him when she comes over to visit him.
Oh, so they did have like extra communication then, because yeah, she's then come back.
She was
to
emailing
visit.
Him and stuff like that, and then she comes over. They had this romance in the August, and she comes over in the autumn of 2006.
That's only a couple of months, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's not like that long in the scheme of things.
But you know, hot and heavy in Crete on the Mediterranean, probably. You know,
it's a fun fling, and then yeah, she go to like mundanities of.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's probably a cowardly move, but he tells her by text that it was over when she was in the same country. So maybe a foreshadowing of what was to come. He didn't want to have to deal with her face to face is where my brain went with that one. She starts calling him. She sends him letters. She's desperate to continue the relationship, which never works if someone's actually checked out of said relationship. You can't force someone to make you love them. So she tries killing herself, according to her. He feels guilty and lets her stay on his sofa for a couple of days.
That's a rapid escalation.
Yeah, I think it was wrist-cutting that she tried with this one, but 100%. And then he takes her to the airport in Stockholm and says, bye-bye, it's done, and walks away. What he doesn't know is that she does have a history of suicide attempts, possibly for attention, possibly to get her own way. Christine goes back to Germany and her mental state is such that she cannot accept it's over. She starts telling Torgny that she's pregnant and he is the father. By this point, Torgny has started seeing a woman called Emma.
Do we know the time span from this?
This is early 2007.
No, I'm wondering from the point of when he like basically dropped her off at the airport and said, there's your bags. I'm wondering what's the time span? Because if she's saying she's pregnant and now suddenly he's met this new woman, I'm wondering... Yeah. I'm wondering,
on the right path. You're absolutely on the right path, but it's her mental state that makes all this happen. So you just know that this is a pack of lies. It's round about October. He went, bye. And this is sort of like January time. She's, oh, by the way, I'm pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's seeing this lady called Emma, who had recently split from her husband. She had two small children with said husband, a boy called Max and a little girl called Sage. And it was going well. And he didn't really want Christine throwing a spanner in the works. So he asked for proof of the pregnancy. Of course, there was none forthcoming. But she keeps up the pretense, going as far as to tell Torgny that she'd given birth and given the child up for adoption.
How the fuck did she give birth in like 6 months?
Yeah, I know. He gets a letter from a man who says he's adopted the child. Torgny doesn't believe a word. And he's correct. Christine is the one who wrote the letter. March 2007. Christine moves to Stockholm, which is about 100 miles away from Arboga, where Torgny and Emma were going so strong, he'd moved in with her and her children. And as far as he was concerned, Christine was a mistake from the summer of 2006. Of course, Christine is not going to let him go that easily. She travels up and down at least twice to Arboga. It's not a huge place. She manages to find out where Torgny is living and finds out about Emma and the children. And predictably, she tries to kill herself again and is admitted to hospital, but is released. The reports there do say cuts to the arms. So there's no mention anywhere at this point about any mental health treatment, although I've heard that she was on antidepressants, but she kept on stopping them, which they don't work if you stop and start.
A lot of people think SSRIs start working in a couple of weeks. It takes like 6 months to have neurogenesis, like the birth of new like brain cells. That's where you get brain fog. Like, yeah, if she's on SSRIs and she's stopping them.
She's stopping and starting, stopping and yeah. So medical treatment in Sweden isn't free, but it's also not actually expensive. A trip to a doctor for basic health care would be between $10 to $12, so about £8-10.
That's nothing.
Yeah, I know. And even specialist treatment would only be about $40. But you need what's called an EHIC to us, which Christine could get as an EU citizen, which is the European Health Insurance Card.
I had one of those.
Yeah, we've all had them when we've travelled, but yeah. Obviously we're now no longer part of the EU. The waiting times for treatment are the problem, isn't it always? So it's recommended that you get private health insurance when you're in Sweden, which would set you back around, get this, $400 a year. There's very little difference between the state and private healthcare quality out there. So you'd be daft if you didn't do it, you know?
I'm going to mention a brief thing about doctor's appointments in the UK. Do you know why we have you have to ring up in the morning to get an appointment that day? Because back when you could ring and you could book an appointment for a couple of days in the future or even a week,
yeah.
The government were like, we're going to stop funding you because people's wait times are so long. So the doctor's work around that was you could only have the same day appointments.
Well, that's stupid.
Because that way they're then giving you an appointment the same day. So for them, it's a really good metric, but it's actually the opposite. Because that way they're then filling their quota of having quick turnover times. But then people just don't get the appointments because there's only so many you can get.
And typical stupid government. So anyway, back to this lot. We have at least two, and there are reports of maybe three times she's tried to kill herself. Comes out much later. She's a manipulative liar. See the pregnancy for a start. So would she have even been honest with medical staff what was going through her head? They are going to take her on face value when she tells them what's going through her head, aren't they? You're looking for help. You shouldn't be lying or, you know, admission. But anyway, this thing sort of ticks along for a few months. No idea if Christine is working, but suspect she probably is, because how else would she be able to afford the apartment she rented and the train trips to Arboga? And I was really shocked how cheap the train tickets are out there. It's 100 miles away. Guess how much it costs, Cameron?
Is this in 2007?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
One-way ticket, which is usually more expensive.
If I'm honest, I have no reference, because the only long-distance train thing I've done is Leeds in Scotland, and I don't know all the distance of that. So I did £8.
Well, it's £19. Trust me, that's dirt cheap one-way ticket. So Emma and Torgny are living together, and later they say that they hear noises on a couple of occasions in the apartment in March. But when they go and investigate, they can't find any explanation. Now, if you have pets, you all know that crash that comes from another room and you wince in anticipation of what you will find. But they didn't find anything amiss. Probably thought it was just the children playing, I would suspect.
At this point, has Tony had any communication with Christine?
No. From
the point of her being a man, sending him a letter as a bloke saying, yeah. I adopted it. He's had no communication with her.
Yeah, exactly.
Seemingly, as far as we know.
Okay. Yeah.
So to him, it's not going to be her. It's going to be the cat that they don't have or the kids.
Yeah, exactly. But apparently, Torgny also found the front door was wide open one day when he was in the apartment. And it's not good when you have small children, but it's easy not to shut the door properly, isn't it? So, you know, I did it myself the other week.
No, you did it today with the door of the car.
Yeah, and that was another story as well. So the police later say that Christine is shown on CCTV on the 12th and 14th of March in Arboga. But I believe she'd been there many, many more times than that. This is 2008, by the way. We've gone on a full year. 17th of March 2008, Emma, who was then 23 years old, answers a knock at her door.
She's only 23?
Yep.
How old's Tony?
I don't actually know how old he is. No,
does it not say anywhere?
No. No.
Because I'm wondering the age range on that, because if she's in her 30s, Emma's in her early 20s, and how old's Tawny?
I would have said Tawny. He's probably in his mid-30s as well. It does seem...
Okay.
But she's got these two children, and, you know. So she answers this knock at the door, and she's greeted by the sight of Christine, who she doesn't know. Christine is wielding a hammer. Emma is beaten around the head 15 times, but miraculously does not die. Tawny arrives home to find a bloodbath and Emma still breathing, but much worse is to come. The bodies of Max, then aged 3, and Sugar, then aged 1, are all found in the apartment. They did not survive the brutal assault. Emma is rushed to the hospital and put in an induced coma for a number of days. Predictably, Tawny is arrested along with the children's father, Nicholas. Police don't cover themselves.
Wait, why was the children's father... Is that just like a default shit? We don't know what it is. Arrest someone.
Yeah. And they'd had a contentious divorce, but they'd gotten along better.
From the police perspective at this point, they don't know who's done it. They don't know anything about Christine or Niklaus. But I just feel bad for Niklaus now, because he's been arrested. Obviously, it doesn't mean anything necessarily, but his kids have just been killed.
Oh, it gets worse.
I know it might have been a contentious divorce, but that doesn't mean he doesn't love his kids.
Well, it gets worse what the police do. They told him that his children were dead. He collapses. And then they ask him if he needs sedating, and then tell him that they're arresting him for the children's murder and the attempted murder of Emma. I mean, the bloke's in absolute bits. Do you need drugs? Oh, by the way, you're under arrest. There's zero evidence against Nicholas, except, as I said before, they'd not gotten along after the divorce. It was described as tempestuous, but they'd gotten better and the children would stay with Nicholas every other weekend. So the police had no evidence whatsoever against him or Tawny. No murder weapon was found either. And whilst Emma was found clutching hair in her hands, it didn't match either man. They had to let them go very quickly and were stumped who could have done this until they actually listened to what Tawny had to tell them about his summer holiday romance and the rather fixated woman who was still trying to get his attention. The police tracked down Christine to Germany. And the German police arrested her on the 22nd of March 2008 and took DNA samples and then released her. On the 24th of March, the German police then sent that DNA samples to the Swedish police. But when Emma eventually woke up and told authorities it was a woman who had attacked her, they started to look into Christine very hard whilst waiting for the DNA results. They learned that Christine had gone back to Germany on the 18th of March, the day after the attack. They spent a long time looking at video surveillance from the train station at Arboga and managed to contact witnesses who confirmed visual sightings of Christine. Now, we all know that those things are not particularly good, but they went with that. On the 29th of March, an arrest warrant was issued. And she was arrested in Germany the following day and then extradited to Sweden to stand trial. She didn't want to talk to investigators, and if and when she did, it made little sense. She lied to them about her whereabouts, which they could prove. Then she would refuse to explain any inconsistencies in her stories. The Swiss didn't hang about. She is swiftly brought to trial on the 30th of July 2008, and other things come to light, as is often the case. Several witnesses say they saw a hooded figure that could fit the description of Christine in the area of the home in the days prior, as well as immediately before the murders were committed. One neighbour even said that the person had stood on the driveway watching Emma's house, but they just couldn't identify them because they had this hood up. Friends of Christine testified. One male friend came over from Germany and he said that he'd met up with her when she'd returned home from Sweden on the 18th of March. He had the impression that she was absolutely fine and she was happy about her new job as a tourist guide in Stockholm. He testified to say that she'd claimed not to have known how a hammer got into her handbag, and it had probably belonged to a landlady, but he couldn't remember exactly, and she'd had to dump it at the airport on the way home.
Hang on, I just want to go back briefly, about a minute. Are you saying she was stood at the end of the driveway staring in like the bitch from The Ring?
Yes, exactly that. But
well, that's not fucking weird at all, is it?
No.
And then this bloke person is saying, oh well, she might have had a hammer on her, but we don't know why.
Yeah,
it's just a quinky dink. What the fuck?
So Christine had only mentioned the hammer in connection with doing repairs at the flat when she'd rented a room in Stockholm to the police. This German chap also testified he didn't think she could have been pregnant last year, because although she did wear a lot of baggy t-shirts, he had the impression she'd lost weight. Prosecutors also revealed that Tawny had a blog where he wrote about his life with Emma and the children. And Christine had been to that blog 230 times prior to the date when the two toddlers and their mother, Emma, were attacked. Don't do blogs, people. Don't care what anybody says. A search of Christine's computer also uncovered pictures of Emma's house and searches that could be connected to Emma and Tawny.
I don't think her looking at that blog 230 times in a year and a half is that much. If she's obsessed with someone, I'm surprised that's not multiple times a day. If they're updating regularly, almost like where they are, what they're getting up to, she's going to have this weird, it's not parasocial, but she's going to have this weird obsession with it, because she's thinking, oh, has he posted yet? Has he posted yet? It's kind of no different than stalking an ex, I guess, on social media when people do that. Constantly just checking their feed.
That's exactly what it was. It was
they
stalking.
Are doing that way more than 250 times. They're doing that every day, multiple times a day.
Well, it's these other searches that could have been connected to Emma and Tawny, as in she was looking, you know, she would search his name and see what else she could find associated, and she would search Emma's name and find out what else she could find associated. So yes, it is a form of stalking. But to them, 230 times seemed a lot, but you and I both know.
I mean, I guess back then it would have been a lot, wouldn't it? It's just now we know how easy it is to do that.
Yeah.
You hear about cases of people being stalked, and I bet that's in the thousands.
Yeah.
And it might have only been like over a month, because how much are people on their phones? You're sort of ready, able to do that.
Yeah.
Back then, you'd have to be on the computer. You can't do it on your phone. So I guess that is a lot back then.
Mm. Christine's excuse? Not me. The computer was given to me by a friend.
Just like the hammer wasn't hers. Yeah.
And the friend must have been what done it, Gov. Yeah. She later admitted that she had written down Emma and Tawny's address to give it to the man who had adopted her child with Tawny in case he wanted to get in contact with him. The child that doesn't exist. They never found any evidence whatsoever that any child had ever been born. She refused to answer any questions when the child was born. No evidence of it whatsoever. When it came to her for her to testify, she did something rather strange, and I'm not sure it would fly in any other country or court for that matter. The prosecution asked her about a holiday to Greece in 2007, the year after she met Tawny. And she refused point blank to answer that question. Instead, she pulls out a journal or a diary and starts to read out what she had written in it to the court in English. She's German, the court is Swedish. Talk about confusing. Prosecution were baffled. It was the first they'd heard of the diary and it had not been put into evidence, and they wanted it stopped. Even the defence knew nothing about this journal. The judge, however, decided to allow it. Why? I've got no clue. Copies were taken and handed out to the prosecution and the defence, and she was allowed to continue reading from a diary. Now, I'll point out to those that are not used to trials in the UK and the USA, such a move would normally have had a trial stopped, at least to give both parties time to review the material and or conduct any investigations into anything that was contained therein. The trial could have also been declared a mistrial and started again. Apparently not in Sweden. So Christine called into question what she was alleged to have said on several occasions during the investigation, claiming the conclusions about what she'd said during police questioning were inaccurate. According to her, the possible motive given by the police and prosecutors of jealousy of Emma and the children didn't exist. She also continually refuted claims that she was mentally ill, again reciting notes from her diary. She said she wasn't all that bothered about Tawny. He was the one who emailed her and said he was lonely without her and missed her. It's true, he may have said that, but only in the initial months after he got home. Christine's subsequent behaviour put paid to any feelings he had for her. She denied using a hammer and said the claims were slander. Sorry, love, not true in a criminal trial. She also said she was insulted that the court had been told it was likely that she'd been at Emma's house and sneaking around. Terrible slander, she said, adding she didn't have a hammer with her when she travelled to Germany, and equally the injuries inflicted on Emma and the children could have come from an axe. Problem with that was Christine's landlady testified that she had a hammer that had gone missing whilst Christine had been living with her and had still not been found. And to the prosecution, it lent weight to the fact that the crime was premeditated for quite some time. Prosecution's biggest problem was proving their theory. The DNA did not match. The hair sample didn't match, didn't even match any animals. But they had CCTV to show she was at the station and she'd lied about it. And they also had Emma's visual ID of Christine. It's one of those balance of probability cases. And so on the 26th of August 2008, Christine is found guilty of the murder of Max and Saga and guilty of the assault on Emma. The prosecution is convinced Christine is mentally ill, and the court is also. So they order a psychiatric evaluation to see if she'd be sent to a prison or to a mental hospital. This was supposed to take at least 6 weeks and involve many hours of meeting with mental health professionals.
I bet it took like 2 hours because she bit them or something, didn't it?
No. Well, she refused point blank to engage with it at all.
Yeah, now, that will help your case.
Yeah, well, remember, we've had multiple suicide attempts, a fake pregnancy, strange behaviour in court, and this. She also had non-cooperation with her own defence team. She refused to cooperate with this psych eval whatsoever. So the court had no alternative. Then on the 14th of October 2008, Christine is sentenced to life in prison. She was also ordered to pay 100,000 kroner, which was $11,800, each to the children's parents. Now, I couldn't find out if that was each child, as well as though the figure of $65,000 was mentioned to Emma and had been bandied about. There's all sorts of figures flying about. I couldn't work out. It's probably lost in translation. Whatever it was, I doubt she had any money. So what effect that had, I don't know.
Also, that's like attributing a monetary value onto your child.
Oh, no.
That's kind of strange. But the pain and anguish you're going through for your child, that's worth about 11 grand. That doesn't sound... that. It's better than, what's the alternative, kind of getting nothing? Because then you're kind of left without anything at all, and then you kind of have like this like the financial implications of it. So I guess you can be supported by the financial side of it. That doesn't make you feel any better. And what are you going to do? Feel guilt for having to spend the money that you've earned from your child, not earned, but got from your child dying? I'd be like, that's really strange. It's different than an insurance policy, because that's something you've taken out. This is directly coming from the person that killed it, saying this is what they're worth. It's weird. That's really weird.
I did wonder if that was to pay for a funeral over there, because I'm not sure what the rules are. I didn't. Yeah. That's one of the few avenues I didn't go down when I was looking at that. I'm sure as well, I did read one article in Swedish that her lawyers were pro bono, you know, free of charge. They're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. And I'm sure she didn't have the money to pay for lawyers. But there is a criminal legal aid system in place in Sweden. Plus, she even had a German lawyer on hand too throughout the trial. So who paid for that? I don't know. Job done. Well, it's not. It seems life sentences in Sweden are typically commuted after 10 to 15 years. Now, I thought our UK courts were lenient, but I was astonished at that. She was also supposed to be deported after finishing her sentence. So her lawyer immediately said, appeal, appeal, because Christine didn't feel she'd been given a fair trial. The court had been made up of one, what you could call professional judge, and two lay judges, so not qualified in any way. And Christine felt that they'd been unduly influenced by the main judge.
But wasn't she being uncooperative, though?
Yeah. Yeah, she's just...
No, I know, you're not defending her, but I'm sort of saying she's being uncooperative.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it an unfair trial when you're the one that's being a dick?
So the defence also raised the fact that an expert, well, it was actually two, said it was impossible for Emma to have remembered what she saw on the day due to the nature of her injuries. But the court said that some of the memory would be reliable, such as Emma was attacked by a woman. The appeal court also concluded that Christine had lied about why she was in Arboga.
Also, the defence can't say that because that's just based on a... It's like a, you can't say, oh, a rule of thumb is people have been had their head smacked in 50 times by a hammer can't remember anything. That's you're not taking it case by case. That's like saying, oh, God, well, women don't have the strength to hit someone over the head with a hammer, therefore she didn't do it. You can't just do it based off of like a hunch.
Well, these two experts said it's possible, but it's also could be.
Yeah, if you're saying it's possible, that there's a difference in probable and possible, and you have to address each one accordingly. You can't be like, oh, well, fucking maybe flip a coin. No.
Well, the court decided that she could probably remember some of it at least, which was the fact it was a woman, whether it was Christine or not. But yeah. So she lied about why she was in Arboga. Apparently, she was looking at some historic Viking drawings. I couldn't find out if it was supposed to exist at all. And what she'd said was that admits to being Arboga on the night of the murders, but claims she was there just to look for a runestone. She was, however, completely unable to tell the court the route that she had taken to get there. And apparently she was so keen to make the journey to Arboga that she'd borrowed money from a friend in Stockholm to make the trip. $19. Well, it was 19 quid. So it had been a return journey. So say less than 40 quid to look at a bloody runestone. But she had to go that night to see this runestone.
Specifically to the town of the guy that she had been with a year ago.
Yeah. She also said that she'd taken photographs of the runestone, but they were such poor quality, she deleted them off her phone. Police had never been able to retrieve them, even if they existed. The appeal court also believed that she did have a hammer with her and she'd lied about it. There was also a point raised in the appeal about a pair of shoes or trainers that Christine denied having with her. She'd thrown them away when she was living in Germany before she'd come back to Sweden. The prosecution were able to prove that she did have them. There was a photograph from a party in Sweden where she was wearing them, yet they'd never been found. And the tread pattern from a similar pair matched bloodstained shoe prints at the scene. And this had all been presented at trial. The appeal court concluded yet again that Christine had lied about owning the shoes. So on the 16th of February 2009, that was all thrown out for appeals. Christine then starts complaining, of course she does, about the harsh conditions she was in prison and how she was suffering.
In a Swedish prison?
Yes.
The sort of ones that are renowned for being actually quite a good prison and in terms of reform.
Oh, let me get into that. But bearing in mind, she'd been found guilty of the murder of two small children and she was having a rough time, apparently. The Swiss press and judiciary were rather upset about the description of these barbaric conditions Christine was held in. And I was astonished when I read about how the prison she was in was run. Now, I didn't know. You've just said how good they are. Well, I didn't know. Apparently they are. We often joke in the UK about holiday camp conditions in prison. But this one really was. She had her own room. She had a shared kitchen, which was fully stocked. And she had access to it 24 hours a day and access to entertainment and leisure activities.
People that think that that kind of stuff isn't fair for a prisoner, you've done something wrong, why do you deserve it? Those things have been shown to reduce recidivism rates of people that actually then return back into prisons because they achieve something there. They get out of the hole they were in. They usually get educated. So when they leave, they can actually earn money and not resort to crime again. Her case is different because it's not a career criminal. You've not done it based on your material conditions. You're doing it for a reason. You're doing it because you've got this like abhorrent violence towards this man, but you took out on the woman instead, and then her two kids who
had nothing to do with it.
Even her like twisted mindscape, she could blame Emma for this, right? She could, obviously, completely innocent. But the two kids, what have they done? That's just a way to get back at Emma, almost. Yeah. And then at Tony, that's the only way to get around. Like, I don't understand it. But the Scandinavians, the Swedish, even like Icelandic prisons, they have this like really low turnover rate of people that return back to prison. Also, a problem in Iceland is because there's only like 300,000 people. The people that go to prison there are often related to the judges, the guards, and the people that run the prison. So there's like really specific rules on who people can, where people can work in Icelandic prisons.
I'm not sure if it was Iceland or Greenland. I remember listening to a podcast on, they basically just get locked up at night because they don't.
That depends where it is. And yeah. I think when Iceland was in a football game and they're doing really well, something like half the population of the country left to go watch it. Imagine that. Imagine being in a country where people, half the population leave to watch a football game.
Well, this Christine thing, she couldn't walk out and she was deprived of her liberty, but in no way could it be described as anything.
Yeah, because you hit someone with a hammer 15 times and then killed two children.
Yeah. I'm going to say, because I've already done the research for another episode, she needed to research Japanese prisons if she thinks that she's got a problem, honestly. February 2012... she tries to lodge another appeal, which was denied. But in March of 2012, as is often the case, Christine managed to get herself transferred to a prison in Germany to carry out the remainder of her sentence. Now, due to German privacy laws I've mentioned before, I cannot confirm that Christine is now free and living her life, but I suspect that's the case. Tawny and Emma stayed together and went on to have two children of their own.
That's really good. That's like a weird silver lining. Not silver lining, but a good note to end on. Almost.
Something good that came out of it, yeah.
Usually when a couple lose a kid, they break up because of the difficulty of having to deal with it. But they've kind of unfortunately bonded through trauma and seen where they worked
exactly
and then had two kids.
There are documentaries where they're out there and they sat there discussion. Obviously, it's all in Swedish.
I guess it's one way or the other. People either break up or it makes them stronger. Yeah. Thankfully, that happened with those two.
Yeah. The really nasty part of this case I've left until the end. In September 2008, the Swedish media reported that the public preliminary investigation protocols concerning Christine's murder trial had been made available through a torrent on Pirate Bay, a Swedish website. So it's basically once it's this preliminary investigation becomes publicly available, the moment a lawsuit, you know, a case is filed, and it can be ordered from the court by any individual. This document included pictures from the autopsy of the two murdered children, which caused the father, Nicholas, to urge the website to have the pictures removed, as you would.
I guess there's a problem with something like Pirate Bay or YouTorrent, etc. They're almost just like forums that people post. So if I download a game, for whatever reason, 60 gigabytes, I can then basically upload that to another website through various means that people can then download that and play the game themselves. That's basically why it's, or how it's used the most is...
This became a form of voyeurism, I think, and this is what bothered everybody. People could apply to the court.
It's going to be unmoderated as well, for the most part. That's what you don't know if you are downloading a game or you're going to be downloading like fucking autopsy pictures from a child.
The Pirate Bay refused to remove the torrent or this file share, and the number of downloads increased to about 50,000 a couple of days after they put them up, which is a phenomenal amount. So on the 11th September 2008, the website's press officer participated in a debate program on a public Swedish broadcaster called SVT. This chap had agreed to participate on the condition that the father of the children, Nicholas, would not take part. Well, Swedish TV reporters. He joined the programme, but by phone. He wasn't in the studio. This Pirate Bay press chap had a fit, and Pirate Bay refused to deal with the press afterwards. They said, "We don't think it's our job to judge if something is ethical or unethical or what other people want to put on the internet." And I kind of get where he's coming from. But those autopsy photos are still out there and freely available. And I came across them when I was not even looking. There were no spoilers, nor were they hidden behind any of a sort of a do not share banner. And it did take me by surprise. And whilst I've seen many such pictures, the fact that they were young children made it much worse. The photographs are also very high quality and very graphic. So if you don't want to hear the rest of this discussion, skip forward this episode, maybe 5 minutes, okay? Cameron, if you're willing, I have sent you a separate...
Yeah, I don't want to click on them, though, because I don't want to see autopsy pictures of kids.
No. Right.
I can give that one a miss, personally.
I don't blame you. I will describe it, but I'm not going to go into gruesome details. The pictures depict mainly Max, I believe, as they're mostly unlabeled. He was under 4 years old. The wounds on his face do look more like a knife wound. But if you look closer, it's obvious the skin has split from a blow rather than a knife, I would suggest, which would also, from the size, appear to be a hammerhead. Obviously, there's little to no bruising, as the blood was not flowing. The average skull thickness for a man is 0.25 inches or 6.35 millimetres, and the average for a woman is 0.28 inches or 7.11 millimetres. And it's actually thins sometimes as people get older. In children, it's much harder to measure, obviously, and does vary also due to racial heritage, etc. But I couldn't find anything about the thickness of the skull. The size of the skull, yes, but not the thickness of the bone. However, if you look at the autopsy photographs from this case without knowing which one was which child, you can see the difference in the thickness of the bone. Bearing in mind, Max was, he was 3 years, 9 months, I believe. And Saga was just a year old. I remember being told by a medical professional that young children are bendy and not to panic quite the same if they fall over, as their bones don't break the same as older children or adults. And that's why child abuse is so very hard to accept, because the force required to actually do the damage is immense. It's often said it resembles a car crash injury. With these two babies, the skulls are shattered in the pictures where the skin has been peeled back. There's no other way to describe it. There had been real force, real anger behind those blows. I believe Max received 15 blows, the same as mother, but Saga less. I don't actually know how many wounds she had, but I think there's two or three you can see on the photographs. She was so much smaller. She probably stopped moving very, very quickly or fighting. Skull fractures could heal, as I myself know. But the brain damage that would have been caused, the trauma to the central nervous systems of these babies by the multiple blows, there would have been no coming back. Your views on that, Cameron? You know more about the central nervous system than I do.
Well, I don't really need to say anything. You've got an infant that's been basically had their skull crushed. You can't come back from that. No, there's not much you can really say. Like, if they did survive, they're going to be nothing but just in a basically comatose state, needing round the clock care.
Vegetative state. In my research for this episode, I came across a site that had attached all the available primary investigation paperwork, and the person behind it had analysed it all. Obviously, it was all in Swedish, this original paperwork, hundreds and hundreds of pages, and it was really hard to follow using Google Translate, I may add. Some of the points that this person analysed regarding the evidence could have merit, such as the coat Christine was seen wearing in the CCTV footage at the station was beige, and it should have been covered in blood, theoretically, assuming she even wore that one. Not found. Other points were strange, and I couldn't follow the logic or the thinking, which made it rather an odd read. There was talk of the pictures being reversed, mirror images, if you will, like that somehow proved something. And they were very, very fixated on this coat for sure.
They'll be trying to get away with it by saying they're clearly blows dealt by a left hand and she's right-handed, therefore she couldn't have done it. But that's just a flipped image.
Yeah.
That's why that kind of falls apart.
Yeah. This site also posted the most graphic of those autopsy photographs. And final thoughts on that website, I will leave to your imagination after I read the final paragraph on that page. And I quote, "My assumption is that Shura has been assigned by Jehovah as a semen courier. The CIA has monitored her movements in Stockholm and Iboga and subsequently made her a patsy in connection with the murders. The CIA is responsible for this false flag operation." Yeah.
So they're a conspiracy theory crazy person. Okay.
Yeah. I've linked the website as normal. You've been warned.
Well, the show notes aren't going to have, or the descriptions, anything isn't going to have the actual link to these autopsy pictures, because I don't want those posted on the thing, because I don't want to sort of condone that behaviour particularly.
Unfortunately, you can't. I can't not post some of the stuff I've used, which does contain them. I could try taking them out.
We can, fuck them.
No. So apparently, as well, Christine was only the seventh woman to be sentenced to life in prison in Sweden. And if it's on average 10 to 15 years in prison only, crime in Sweden at this level by women is obviously rather unusual. So I just hope that if she ever gets into a relationship with anyone ever again, they have a law in that country, the same as we do in the UK, Clare's Law and a couple of others, where you can find out someone's criminal background. Let's just say anyone would need to sleep with one eye open. Mental illness? Who knows? Personality disorder? Probably. Evil? Yes. And finally, the victims who should not be forgotten. Max, age 3. Saga, aged 1.
And that's the end of our first podcast back.
2023.
It's technically our third year of the podcast, isn't
it? Yes, we're going into our third year.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MurderMeMondayPodcast. Email us at MurderMeMondayPodcast@gmail.com. Patreon in the description below and all that good stuff. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Peace.